Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's good, internet? It is Monday, October 30th, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 109. 109, almost 110. It is a strange Monday morning. It's been a big news day. It's been a big games day. This whole morning, whatever you got, whatever you want, we got it. I'm Austin Walker. Joining me today, you already heard the voices of Patrick Klefik.
Spelunky 2!
And our very own Danielle Riendo. And the thing I'm going to yell is, indictments.
Indictments!
Lots of indictments. And a guilty plea from one person today.
I would like to indict Derek Yu for sending me back to the caves in Spelunky. I thought I'd escape that fucking nightmare trap.
All right, so let's
delay that game. Delay
Paris
that game.
Week. What are we talking about? Paris Games Week is happening this week. Sony made a big push, it seems, Sony Europe made a big push to be like, yo, we're out here. Let's
I put out a tweet out this morning that it's always tough to do vague tweets because people can read into that however they would like, and so apologies if you read that tweet and you were upset that like Bloodborne 2 wasn't announced or whatever was like your personal pet game that you wanted announced that would have qualified for big for you. But yeah, I had heard a little while ago that there was some discussions about sort of restructuring the way that like the two big news announcements for Sony during the year are E3, TGS, and the PlayStation Expo that happens in December in... Was it in San Francisco or was it in Vegas last year? It was in Vegas last year. It was in San Francisco the first year.
Yeah.
I don't know where it is this year. And that there had been a push from Sony Europe to make Paris Games Week like one of those milestones. And I had heard that the sacrificial lamb for that was going to be a PlayStation experience. And so that there were going to be like a big push for announcements. And I think there were like big announcements. But as one of my sources put it, who was one of the ones that had been like inform this was the position that, that Sony was taking, it was like it maybe says something bad about Sony's like lineup for things they could announce if that was positioned as like the big thing, and there won't be as much until E3 next year. So all that said, I thought there was some really cool stuff announced at the show today.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't get the mecha Dark Souls I wanted, but I guess
Armored Souls still exists
Armored
out
Souls,
there.
It's in my heart. One day, but it was a good show. I've gone up and down on this. Like, I think so. There was a pre-show that was very VR focused. Danielle, you wrote about that actually.
Yes, I sure did. There are a lot of things that looked really cool. There was especially something called Star Child, which is a platformer, like a sci-fi, cartoonish, very colorful looking platformer. And, you know, of course, my ears perked up because it was like, oh, it's a cinematic adventure platformer. You know, it's the little talking heads interview. And I was typing something else. And I was like, oh, those words, those make me excited. And I tabbed over to watch it. And it was like, oh, it's in the VR showcase. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. And it's like, it's a game that doesn't look like from what I saw, it doesn't look like it needs to be in VR, right? Like, it's a 3D, but, like, 2D plane platformer, right?
What
like,
I'll say is I've played both Star Child and Moss, which is another one of the sort of, like, platformy, like, 2D plane. I mean, Moss is, you're running on a 3D environment, but, like, it's very close in. It's not... It's using... one of the genres that actually benefits the most from 3D is actually, like, fixed perspective 2D games. Like, we saw that, Austin, you know, when you and I played that like miniature car racer
Tiny Tracks or something
Tiny
like that.
Tracks. Tiny Tracks. Moss looks... it's a game that will function just fine without VR, I think. I haven't played enough of it to, like, say definitively, but was a game that felt tangibly improved in the experience of playing because of VR. I don't know if Star Child would be as much. I didn't play. I only played like a 10-minute demo of that.
Right.
But I don't blame people for looking at some of that stuff and being like, I wish they would just put out a non-VR version of that, which like inevitably yeah. probably will. That'll just show up on Steam, you know, 6 months later for a lot of those projects.
Yeah, I just feel like we're paying lip service at this point to the
VR.
Like, honestly,
or...
to VR even being a thing in like, 6 months.
I'm shocked that it was there. Like, I mean, this is the thing. The PSVR has sold all right. The headset prices are coming down on PC and stuff like that. I am, like, such a VR skeptic. I still think it's too expensive. I still think, like, the buy-in isn't there. I'm so bored of shooting galleries and games in which, like, the sell. Like, there was a VR game in the big show, the big press conference called Blood and something. What was that called, Patrick? Do you remember?
Blood and, I want to say
Silk?
Fury.
No. Blood and Fury. Oh my god, what a bad name.
Blood and Silk?
Blood
is
and
that
truth.
What you just
blood
said?
And truth.
Blood and Silk would. Blood and Truth, god. Blood and Silk would be dope. I would play Blood and Silk. Are you kidding me?
That's way more fun.
Yeah. But Blood and Truth, eh.
It's just like a shitty Bond, like alternative yep. James Bond.
And it's like London.
James Bond the Bodyguard. Like,
right.
Which is
yes.
even. You know.
It's London Studio 2, which means it has just like a little bit of the getaway in there.
And they're a talented studio. They do some cool stuff.
Totally. But it's one of those things where I don't know that the VR experience at this point is ever going to pull me back in if it's just going to be shooting galleries and like platformers that I wish I was just playing on the non-2D or non-VR experience. Like I'm looking at my headset. It's right over there. I haven't put it on in months. There's stuff that I theoretically should want to play on VR. Like Super Hot VR came out. I still haven't played that. I could right now go set that up, but it's like something about it is just like so off-putting to me, and I'm swinging back and forth. Like I'm not firm on what I feel about VR at this point, because on one hand I am a skeptic as a personal, like in a personal way, but I'm glad that they're giving the floor to VR people to some degree, because people are throwing money at it. Like on the development side, people are throwing their time at it. They're like, all right, this is it. I'm going to swing for the fences and try to make the coolest VR shit I can think of. And I'm glad that they're getting some support. I just hope that something hits, you know?
That's what honestly, at this point, I have less than zero interest in VR. And frankly, I don't want to shit on developers at all. Like, I think people are making interesting things. I think there are interesting and cool applications for VR. I'm just at the point where I can very safely say, I think this is not for me. I get sick, right. And I get sick even in the games where you're not supposed to get sick in. Right. They're always like, right. No, you're not moving much in this. I still get, like, woozy after it. And it's fine. Like, it's okay. It's not for everybody, and it's okay to say it's not for everybody. So, you know, like, as much as I am just basically an old lady at this point with a lot of new technology, it's it's cool. Look, I want people to make the thing that they want to make. I am afraid for developers, however, who are getting supported right now, getting VR money right now, and I'm worried about when that cord is going to get cut and leave people completely, you know, with unfinished projects or anything like that. Like, I just don't see a happy future here. And maybe that's because of the month I'm having, but I am afraid for the future of VR, even though I know it's not for me.
Right. What else did they have today? What was the other? I mean, we'll get to the big one, Patrick. We just jump to it now. Is that, you know, they did transition at the very end of that, I guess, at the very end of the pre-show. They're like, oh, and there's one more thing, and that ended up being maybe the biggest announcement of this entire show, even though it was the
especially
pre-show,
especially for Waypoint as a publication.
Yeah, like, I mean, listen, how did we launch our website? Like, we did a live stream, and the first thing that we did was we played co-op Spelunky.
Mm-hmm.
And they announced Spelunky 2. We don't really know anything about it. There's a really great, like, intro of the Spelunky guy, like, having a baby, and the
There's
baby
Spelunky
grows up.
Baby.
Yeah.
I'm genuinely shocked.
What do you
that
want?
That Derek Yu is choosing to make a Spelunky 2, because Spelunky came out on Xbox 360 in 2008, or 2012.
God, was it? Okay, well, I was going to say, you said 2008, and my whole life just turned upside down.
I believe it's 2008 when Spelunky original
came out. Yes,
And so for people that aren't familiar with, like, the timeline of Spelunky, like, you should go back and play, like, the original Spelunky. You can download it for free. The original Spelunky has so much of what would become the, like, classic, like, update to Spelunky that came out in 2012 for originally on the 360. But like the 2012 version, like, just does so many small things, like,
so
big
good.
And small to, like, to like just really tweak it to perfection. And so for, you know, more than, or I guess at this point, you know, for a number of years, like almost 10 years now, Derek Yu has been working on Spelunky in some fashion. Presumably he was working on it prior to 2008 when he published the original version. So it's possible it's been a full decade. And he hasn't announced a game since Spelunky kind of finished coming out on a bunch of platforms, although I wish that original one would just get ported to Switch, because that would be like a super awesome way to play that game again. And so, like, to go back to that well again, like, one, it makes me nervous, because I think, like, there are few games that I would point to as, like, more or less being, like, perfect is a bad word. I don't like that word. But, like, Spelunky is, like, a pretty perfect video game. Like, it's just immaculately made, and I don't play it and look at it and go, yes. Like, a lot of games you play and go, this is an interesting foundation for another game. Like, there's some cool ideas, but, like, I'd love to see where they go with this. I didn't finish Spelunky thinking that. I finished Spelunky thinking, I'd love to see what else Derek Yu wants to make. I don't need to play a Spelunky 2. So, on one hand, I'm nervous. On the other hand, if he feels the need to go make a Spelunky 2, I am captivated by what it is about Spelunky 2 that made him want to go back. Like, there must have been something. He has too much money. He has no reason to make a Spelunky 2.
Well, and he is working on other stuff, right? Like, UFO 50 was announced this year. It's 50 games from 5 indie game makers. Like, it is like, for people who don't know what that is, I don't know that we've spoken about it at length here. It is as if you'd bought, like, one of those weird, oh, there's 50 games on this old NES cart. And they are, like, smaller than 8-bit traditional titles from the 80s, but, like, only slightly smaller. They're big, full games. They're not mini games. They're not micro games. They are, like, that to me suggests like he had a place to do the experimentation, and like UFO 50 is where he is like, oh man, I have this cool idea for a puzzle platformer that does something different. Or I have a cool idea for a racing game. I have a cool idea for a fighting game. I'm going to play with those ideas. And then, like, I don't know what the relationship is between those ideas and Spelunky 2 or anything like that. I'm not trying to make a direct comparison. But it's interesting to me that he is going off and doing this thing with four other people where it's like, let's just explore and do all sorts of wild experimentation. And then over here, it's like, and Spelunky 2. And also, I figured out how to do another Spelunky that is going to be hopefully very good, because Derek Yu is one of the best game designers of our time, for sure.
You should go, people, if any of you didn't play Spelunky, or you just enjoyed watching Spelunky, I think there's a lot of people that enjoy, like, there's a lot of people today who are very excited that I'm going to be forced to play a Spelunky 2 on a daily stream going forward.
I cannot wait.
We'll probably never play Spelunky 2, but if you're interested in game design, Derek Yu wrote a book about the development of Spelunky, in which, in addition to being a really insightful and interesting game designer, he also proves to be like he proves to be insightful about his process of making Spelunky. And if you want to see it in like very plain spoken words why and how he built the game he did, there are probably like there aren't that many good books about game development. And you know, Jason Schreier of Kotaku published an interesting book earlier this year that is definitely worth reading. But from like a pure designer perspective, that breaks down in, you know, one game and all the decisions that went into that, Derek Yu's book is absolutely worth seeking out.
Yep. And it looks like, according to Derek on Twitter, it's coming to PS4 and Steam first. So also going to probably come out.
The dream of a Switch version remains alive, and that will probably happen. And my guess is this is just one of those, you know, 6 months on PS4, and then it'll show up everywhere else.
I mean, one of the people that he's working with, they're working with here, is a porting company.
Yeah, Blitworks.
Blitworks. Yeah. Is it Eric Strach, who did some of the music and sound for Spelunky 1, and also like Downwell, Ridiculous Fishing, Super Crate Box, like good sound designer, also working on this game. And that is exciting, because good sound in games like that means so much. Like, if you don't know it until you've played a game that on its face is really good, but it doesn't communicate what it needs to communicate through like item sounds and enemy sounds, like knowing that you're coming close to like a spike trap because you hear the spikes going in and out of the side of the like the weird object in the environment, like meant so much to getting your head around that space. So it's a small thing, but like I'm glad the same sound designer is working on this game.
Yes.
Yeah, I want to ask you both, since you both have more Spelunky experience than I, you're both spelunkers, I guess, right? Yeah, that's the term. Mm-hmm. Anyway, whatever.
We're spelunkers.
What is something that you would really like to see in a Spelunky sequel? Is there something you can imagine? Okay.
No, not really. I mean, that's why I find myself sort of perplexed and interested in what it's going to be, because I don't know specifically what I would want, even if you're asking me right now, like, what do you want from another Spelunky? It's like, is it more Spelunky? Not really. Like, so I'm actually, that's why I'm curious. I'm wondering if he might, it's called Spelunky 2, but I wonder if we might be surprised at what the approach is.
Right. There's a bunch of possible approaches, right? Like, it could be Spelunky DLC of just like, here's four new worlds, right? Like, that's a version of this game, and it's $20 or $15, and like, boom, here's a cool thing. But someone convinced him to call it Spelunky 2. There's also the SteamWorld Dig to SteamWorld Dig 2 thing, right? Which is like, SteamWorld Dig was proc gen, go down into the mines, dig a bunch. SteamWorld 2 is like, here's an open world that is explorable in the vein of Metroid or, you know, the Castlevania games.
Right.
And so it could be that. Like, it could be a huge set of tombs and worlds to explore. Who knows? Or it could be he figured out a third thing to add to bombs and ropes, right? Like, maybe there's a whole new traversal mechanism that we couldn't think of that he adds that just, you know, it's still just diving through procedurally generated dungeons and stuff. But it is now on top of blowing up walls and using ropes to climb or descend, there's another dimension of exploration that we haven't thought of yet.
I guess I would, if I think about it, like, I love the basic mechanics of Spelunky so much, I would, yes, I'd play another four levels, but I think I would be disappointed if it was just like another four areas. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would love Spelunky and its gameplay dropped into a larger construct, right? Like, I don't necessarily, like, SteamWorld Dig has a story, but like, it's mostly just there to like kind of string you along to do these things. Like, the idea of like Spelunky dropped into something bigger, I don't know what that bigger thing is, but like, in the way that SteamWorld is SteamWorld Dig 2,
right?
I would be interested in something like that, that sort of broadened out what's like, just drop Spelunky.
What is this world?
Yeah.
Well, I think about something like Caves of Cud, which is a roguelike that is not a game I've ever been able to get my head around. It's not like my, like, it's every time I've seen it, I've been like, wow, this is wild. I need to put a week aside to like learn how to play this game. But it's like, it's a traditional roguelike. You explore, you do, you know, there are procedurally generated areas. There are some areas that are handcrafted. But then, like, the story stuff is in there through text, and it's just wild. It's just like, you know, one of the screenshots in the Steam thing is, it's like, live and drink, traveler. Welcome to my village, idyllic Kyukyakua, as it is spoken in the native tongue. How may I serve you? And the first dialogue option is, you are an albino ape. And it's like, yep, this game sounds wild. You're talking to albino apes in their villages, and you become weird mutant people. And I don't want all of that for Spelunky 2, but I could imagine a world in which it's not just that there are four new tile sets, it's that they feel like worlds, and maybe there's a couple of extra NPCs, the way something like Heat Signature, or I don't remember if Rogue Legacy did it, but like, there definitely have been some roguelikes, like progression-driven roguelikes, that make you feel like, okay, you know, there is a bigger world here, there is a story, there is a setting that goes beyond just, I'm trying to get all of the gold, and I can imagine that being fun. But also, I think we're probably all just lying to ourselves. And, like, if it is four new tile sets that feel good, we'd be disappointed. But also, if they feel good, right?
Yes, yes.
So
that's, like, the low bar of just four more Spelunky areas is, that's fine. That's fine.
Right, right.
That's fine.
Yep. What else came out of this before we leave the Paris Game Show behind? Anything else stand out to people?
So you've talked about The Last of Us in the past before, Danielle. I am curious if I watch a lot of horror. I don't have a problem with violence. But the completely out of context, hyper violent, seemingly no point scene. Like, I didn't understand what the point of the section they decided to show at this conference. I'm curious, Danielle, like, what your takeaway of that, or if maybe I'm just like overreacting to a woman having her arm smashed by a hammer.
I feel like they've done this before with The Last of Us. I remember before
there was a shotgun thing, right?
Yeah, there was a shotgun thing where it was just like shooting a guy up close with a shotgun and brain splattering. I don't remember the whole full context, but this was like maybe E3 2012, you know, the year before the game came out. And it just being like, you know, the room erupted at that moment. It felt really gross and really weird and really not what that game was going to be. in a lot of ways, it's certainly a violent game, and, you know, they don't shy away from violence by any means, but it's not really the tone of the game. The game is much more somber and sad, and has at least some airs towards making a meditation on sort of what it is to live in this world and not just be a violent prick in this world.
But it's very character driven. Like, I think that's part of, like, my separated from that game, you know, years, like, the things I remember about it, the things that stayed with me, the things that I enjoyed the most about The Last of Us was the characters in that story. Like, yes, it was a very violent world, but, and that was the context in which they viewed themselves and their actions, but, like, the characters in that game I found to be very memorable. I really, like, I've always been mixed on Uncharted, but I really liked the Last of Us, and I've been looking forward to the sequel, but there's something about the way they market that game, and maybe this is just Shotgun 2.0, but I just, I watching that trailer, I was like, what was the takeaway, right? Like, who are you selling this to? Like, is this going to bring in someone that didn't like the first, like, I just didn't understand, like, was I supposed to get excited about this? Like, I just didn't understand anything about it.
What it felt like to me was that, like, and this is complete speculation, but it felt like Sony Europe, PlayStation Europe was like, hey, Naughty Dog, give us something. It should be something that's not that important, but that gives a little bit of a teaser about the state of the world and what are some major factions and characters. But don't give anything that's like, you know, like, we know you can't give us the big stuff, right? Or maybe they asked for the big stuff, and Naughty Dog was like, yo, here's a scene of a woman.
This game's ways off. Like, I'm guessing this is like fall, 2019.
And I can imagine fans of that series like picking apart that little, you know, 2-minute video. Right. And this is the thing that ends up being kind of weird for me about some of this stuff is, like, I've been in fandom before, and fandom often doesn't let the first take be important and instead begins to dive in to dissect things. So, like, for me, the first take of that is just like, yo, this game has no problem, like, with like intense amounts of cruelty, and there's even a degree of like, yeah, we're gonna fucking show it to it, that doesn't appeal to me personally. I know that there are people who like that stuff in fiction and in film. I'm not, like, or in games too, and I'm not judging people who like the Hostel movies. Like, I don't like the Hostel films at all, but, like, I know that there is an audience for Hostel. They're not my things, but, like, I'm not out here saying you're not allowed to make that art, right?
Right.
But the thing that will often bum me out is I can imagine the fan who is like, no, who cares? Who cares that her arm gets broken with a hammer and the camera doesn't cut away and we just see this woman slam a hammer onto this other woman's arm over and over again.
There's something else, too. Like, there's something sharp there because she's bleeding all over the place, so it's like,
yeah,
there's
yeah,
a hammer,
you're right.
And maybe a nail.
And a nail
too.
Or some shit. Yeah, it sucks. Yeah. It, like, was hard to watch for me. But instead, I think we're going to get a lot of by the end of today is, like, a dozen videos that are like, who are the demons? Like, oh, they mentioned a group called the Demons. They're probably not real demons. It's probably a group. Oh, is she, like, oh, she said that she'd been, what was the exact phrasing? Like, you are nested with sin. What's that? And she dragged a dagger across, or a knife across her belly. I wonder what that could mean. And, like, it is always tough for me when that stuff happens because it's, like, when you take it out of context like that, like, in context, presumably the player will already know who the demons are, whether or not Ellie is pregnant, like, and the point of that sequence will be to characterize these different characters on screen, to like have this moment happen, to introduce a new character in the face of the guy who shows up with the bow and arrow, and, like, that will be the point. But as a piece of advertisement for the game, the point is, like, look at how wild we can go, look at how violent we can get, and also pick this apart for little hints about the world and characters, and, like, that makes the cruelty, which in context might make sense and might be something that I can more easily swallow, feel like it's been forgotten as being cruelty, and just is like, yeah, we'll just include that, like, that's part of the sequence, so it's in here. I don't know, that's my spiel about why I feel weird.
No, I agree, and also there's another piece of context here, which Danica actually tweeted about
yes
100%. Earlier, which was, you know, just how kind of tone deaf it is for Naughty Dog to have something that, like, really implies a lot of sexual violence right after there have been sexual misconduct allegations at the studio. And they put out that, like, absolutely bullshit, you know, milquetoast statement with scare quotes on it that I feel like I can't look away from that either. Like, that's also a part of how I'm looking at this.
Right, right.
I don't know if you both have thoughts on that, but
I think that it's weird. Poorly timed. Or no, I don't think it's poorly timed. I do think it's poorly timed, but I don't think it's poorly timed from Sony in the sense that, like, Sony probably very correctly imagines that everyone doesn't care. That, like, the wide audience of that game is more excited about that game than interested in sexual assault allegations. Probably understands, you know, that the it is often the case that the press will focus on covering a game instead of talking about sexual assault allegations, and it is a difficult thing to be like, all right, we're going to talk about how bad this trailer is, and then also, by the way, don't forget that sexual assault allegation is still in the air, and also their completely bullshit response to it, which we talked at length about a few weeks ago,
yeah.
Is also still there, and nothing new has come out about that stuff. You know, I'll say is reporting on those things.
Compounding the bad taste for me.
Yes, totally. Yeah. Reporting on those things takes a long time. I can imagine there are reporters who are digging into that stuff, like for sure. But like, it is it can be disheartening to think about this event so close to those allegations, and like, I don't know, like, it's not like trailers haven't been pulled or changed or whatever before, and you know, I don't, this trailer wasn't literally about sexual assault or something,
right.
but it can still be, it's just still like very what's the word I'm looking for, like, not shaking, but like, it's like it just leaves me with a bad taste.
Yeah.
It also came right after a trailer from David Cage's Detroit.
Which
like jump to Dead Kid real quick. Like, heads up if you're going to watch this yeah, on these trailers.
I have my Nest Cam in I should be, my kid is extremely sick today and threw up everywhere in the morning, so she's been napping, and I'll be in this podcast as long as she is not awake. But I have like my camera, you know, up on her so I can monitor whether she's woken up or needs anything, and then all of a sudden I'm watching in the other monitor like this fucking David Cage trailer where a kid dies because his shitty dad goes up and beats her to death.
Right, like, beats her to death.
Like, David Cage.
So the trailer for the new Detroit game was, you're playing as Kara, who is a character who David Cage debuted like 6-7 years ago.
At GDC, right? Yeah.
Wait, say that again? What did you just say?
A GDC? Wasn't it like a GDC presentation?
God, it might have been a GDC. That does sound right.
Yeah,
he was just like, look, it was 2012, it was GDC. It was just like, look how good the new PS4 is. Like, look at how beautiful we... In fact, that was PS3, actually, at the time. It was PS3 tech demo about, look how good our tech is. And it was just like, she's an android who is like a maid slash, like, home worker android. And in that, it was like, she got her consciousness back. In this, she is just like a maid who shows up to take care of this single dad and his daughter, and discovers that, like, oh, the dad killed the android last time, and then, like, it goes bad. And in a very, like, quick and hard to watch sequence, it goes from, like, little girl screaming to little girl is dead. And then it's like, oh, but if you intercede, you could stop this from happening. And it's just, like, so, again, tone deaf and, like...
It's just a weird scene to extract, right? Like, I think there's plenty of reason to be, like, deeply skeptical about, like, right, David Cage's ability to tell a story about...
abusive, like, fathers? Abuse? Like, yeah, I don't have... I think that there are stories to be told about abusive parents. Like, absolutely. Nothing... David Cage has a resume. I've read his resume. I've played those games. Like, I'm not new to this. My dude, you haven't earned it. Like, you don't have the range.
And again, like, it's similar to the Last of Us. It's just a strange scene to play out, and especially let's say you haven't been following that game, that trailer tells you, like, very little about, like, what's going on and, like, the larger questions that story is, you know, trying to ask about AI. Like, you know, whether it accomplishes that is an open question, and lots of reason to be skeptical, but it's just a strange scene to highlight, especially out of context for, like, the larger point that David Cage is going to attempt to make with that story. And so that's the weird thing I found about The Last of Us and Detroit was where they, like, the choices. I mean, The Last of, like, to briefly touch on the two of you just had about The Last of Us, that game is also, like, fairly early in development, and my guess is when that scene was picked, it's not as simple as, like, oh, just go find, like, another scene right. to like put in a trailer. That's not an excuse, but I can see how something like that might happen, in which they were sort of backed into a corner if they were going to show anything at all.
Yeah, it feels exploitative, not in the sense that, again, that material shouldn't be in a game, because who knows, maybe he executes on it and we get through that sequence and I'm like, wow, like, I can't believe he stuck the landing. It feels exploitative in that it is a cheap way to communicate to your audience what your ambitions are for your project, and what the stakes of the world are. It feels like...
Well, this is like when we were talking about the horror stuff. Like,
yes,
really,
100%.
When I was saying like how horror leans too far and too quickly into sexual assault as a way of shocking the audience, and like this is in that wheelhouse where it's like it's one thing to present this, and if you stick the landing, but I think people that are fans of David Cage like don't understand why he ends up getting like so much criticism when he's just.
Right.
"Quote unquote," raising the question, but it's because people don't have confidence that he will stick the landing based on past history, and that there's a different, like you said, a resume is important, and if it was someone who had told stories in that wheelhouse before, like it might be the kind of thing where you look at it and go, "Okay, like you're biting off, you're taking a big swing, but like I'm curious to see how you're going to try and make that land." And I think just people increasingly feel like he's not necessarily. Or I think people, I've always had the opinion that I'm often compelled by his ideas, but wish he had a co-writer
100%.
To help him lead him there, because he's a really good ideas person. I was always told this about David Jaffe as well, back when he was at Sony, was that he was someone that was like so good at like the pitch and selling you and getting excited on the idea, but he worked best when there was like some like a right hand person to like steer those ideas in the direction they needed to go to execute on them. And I've always felt increasingly like David Cage is one of those people that if he had someone that was able to be like, David, like, okay, like here's where we're actually gonna, here's the direction where, just was able to take his ideas and like shape them. And for better or worse, Sony lets him run wild. And there's a certain, I have a certain respect for the fact that they do let him just kind of just do the shit that he wants to do. I just often feel his stories would be a lot stronger if he had someone that was there guiding his hand a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No, all you.
I was going to say, I wanted to mention, because I've been negative thus far, there are two things that really caught my eye in a really positive way that I thought were really cool. And I'll just mention really briefly, Concrete Genie looks really beautiful.
Yeah, that looks really cool.
It's like a happy graffiti game. I mean, I don't know much about the mechanics yet, obviously, but it's like a little kid. He's an artist, and there's a really, really nice, charming art style.
I thought that was a little girl. Was that not a little girl?
I don't know. I have no idea. Okay. Did I say he? I'm sorry.
Okay.
I have no idea.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
There's a kid. There's a young
person.
It is
a person, little kid. That's true.
A young person who kind of runs around the world drawing beautiful, gorgeous, like, paintings on buildings, and they come to life, and it looks really beautiful, and maybe they've been bullied, and I hope that,
There are bullies in this game.
Bullied, and I hope they can draw some cool monsters that, like, bite the bullies' asses or something.
Hell yeah.
Cool.
It is a little kid, a teenager, a bullied teenager named Ash, who escapes his troubles by painting spectacular living landscapes and mischievous creatures throughout his abandoned hometown of Denska. The thing that I loved about it was when you're painting these creatures, you are like, you pick brushes, and then it looks like you do the drawing and the brush like draws out the thing. So for instance, there's a page in the trailer, you're picking like from what type of horns to give the monster. And so there's like, okay, I want like an antler like thing, or I want something that looks like tree branches, or I want something that looks like flowers. And so, but it isn't just like, okay, well now they have just tree branches sticking out of their head. You then draw a line and it draws a tree branch or an antler to match the direction that you did. So you still, it's like this nice combination. It's almost like a Photoshop brush or a paint shop. You know what I mean? A Photoshop brush where you're just like, okay, this is going to produce all of the cool effect around it, but I get to at least have the control over where it goes. And that sort of blend of hand controlled artistic creation plus the algorithm helping you make it look good is really cool. And I'm excited to see more of what that is. And that's, who's that from? That's from
Let me take a look.
Pixelopus. which is an in-house SIE, okay. a Sony Interactive team. I don't know what.
Hey,
else
what happened doing. To that Dreams game? What the fuck is Media Molecule up to?
You know, they're working on it.
They're working on it.
I've heard that they're still working on it. Is what I'll say. So that's my rumor mill. Is it's still being worked on? So that's good.
Okay.
Anything else?
Oh.
What else?
Oh yeah. Also,
what was your other one?
The other one is Ghost of Tsushima. Is that?
Oh yeah, the new Sucker Punch game.
The new Sucker Punch game, right.
It is an open world game, but you're a samurai, and it sounds like there's actually a lot of stealth in it. They're using stealth in the description of the game, which gives me hope. Even though I wanted a ninja game, not a samurai game,
I was hoping for Tenchu.
Yeah, that's what I was saying in chat.
I love Tenchu.
Tenchu is amazing, and now that I actually really love stealth games
right.
at this point in life. But it does look really cool. We don't know much about it, but I am interested in.
There was like a brief after the show interview with some of the developers. That was like, hey, we're not going to show you any gameplay yet, but like, let's give you a little more background on the game. It is. It takes place during a period where
Mongols are invading
the island of Tsushima. Maybe that is why it is called Ghost of Tsushima. I took Japanese for 2 years and now I'm fucking it up. Tsushima. There we go. The Mongol army invaded Tsushima in Japan in like 1200 or like 1042, something like that. You play a samurai who's like, nah, get out of here. No, thank you, sir.
Get out.
It looked good. It's a premise. It's a premise that I'm down with.
I just want more games in that era. Personally, I'm interested in that. I think, again, would love more ninja stuff. I know ninjas were the thing in the 80s, but we didn't have a lot of great stealth games in the 80s. So, you know, I'm down for that.
And they're a talented studio, and I was so over Infamous by the time the PS4 one came out that I just didn't even play Second Son, but I really liked the first one and what they did with it, and just a cool studio, so I'm excited that they're doing something like kind of radically different but also feels like right in their wheelhouse. And the fact that like I kind of like that the name's fucking weird and like not straightforward at all. Like
the logo feels really like sci-fi to me, and it makes me wonder if they're going to end up doing an Assassin's Creed
Horizon
or a Horizon, kind of split
the difference where it's like, okay, we're going to be historical, but we want to do some other stuff with gameplay that we can't quite get accomplished with the historical stuff. But I'm excited for that game. I don't know what it's going to be. None of us do, but I'm glad that Sucker Punch is making something new when they're starting to talk about it.
Anything else? What else was there? Is there anything else that we are worth mentioning?
Well, you wrote a brief piece about Shadow of the Colossus.
Yeah, they showed off a Shadow of the Colossus trailer. Weirdly, the one that went up on their website or on the YouTube is a different video, is a different trailer than the one that they showed in the stream. The one that they showed in the stream, I mean, they both share some qualities, which is like, it's a very atmospheric, like almost like creeping trailer of the lead character whose name I'm forgetting. I remember, wait, is Argo the main character or is Argo the horse? Or Arrow?
It's the horse, I think.
What's the main character? Oh, is it just Wanderer or Wander? Yeah. Wander is the name of the main character. Like walking through the desert and kind of exploring the world, and then in the full stream it like turned into the boss fight against the huge giant flying snake lizard thing, which is like one of the best fights in that game, and it just looked gorgeous. Like at all points it just looked so the sense of place is there in a way that often games miss. I think that a lot of big open world games especially will have it in key locations, like when there's going to be a big action set piece here, or there's going to be a big chase sequence here, and so those areas might look really good, but then like the in-between places just don't feel like they don't have a placeness to them. They don't feel breathed, and they don't feel like they're breathing. They don't feel lived in. They don't feel like, neither of those is really right for abandoned places, but they don't feel abandoned is maybe the actual thing. They don't feel like, okay, someone once passed through here, or animal life is really here. Ruins don't feel like ruins. They feel just like setting for you to have a sword fight in. I think that's even true for some of The Last Guardian, which is a game I thought was, like, okay, but, like, I don't think it communicated a sense of place the way that Shadow of the Colossus did. And both of the trailers, the one that's actually up on their YouTube, the one that happened in the stream, both communicated that and, like, seemed to get the tone and atmosphere first style of that game, right? Which is what some people really thought was missing from the debut trailer. Like, a lot of people saw that debut trailer back at E3 when they announced that they were going to do the Shadow of the Colossus remake and said, like, we don't need this. Like, you don't need to pretty up something just because you can. It's available on the last console generation. It was available on the PS3. Like, just play that. That's okay. And I get it. I totally get it and agree that you don't need every game to have the newest, hottest graphics to be good or to be worth playing. And I would take just another remake, another remaster, like regular remaster for the PS4. But seeing what this looks like feels like it's so in line with the goals of the original, and I'm pretty excited for it. So, does it have a date? Does anyone know if that has a date yet?
It's YouTube 2018? Trailer listed it as like February 6th or something.
Okay.
Like that. So,
yeah, awesome. Really, it looks fucking great. I'm in. I'm totally. And like the other thing there was just like it came right after a Monster Hunter World and a Horizon Zero Dawn trailer, and I'm excited about Monster Hunter World because I've never really gotten into one of those games, and it seems like the one to get into. But I liked Horizon Zero Dawn. I think now that I've had more time away from it, I probably am more positive on it than I was at the time when I went from playing that to Breath of the Wild, which is a bad comparison for me, especially for you, specifically,
yes. And the games you like. Like, yes. I feel like you might have liked that game more if you played it now.
Yeah, 100%. Especially coming off of Shadow of War, playing Assassin's Creed Origins, I think Horizon would probably stand out pretty well. But seeing them back to back with Shadow, it was like, oh, right. The thing that I love about Shadow of the Colossus isn't just I'm fighting big monsters. It's that it's like sad. It's that like it's always so fucking sad. Yeah. It always feels wrong. This is not even a new take in any way, right? This is a classic take. But like it always felt like, you know, deeply melancholy. Like, ah, oh, I don't even want to be. These things are so beautiful. I can't believe I'm fucking killing them. And like so. Like there's a degree of like not predestination, but like, well, I'm gonna walk this path and this path sucks, but I'm gonna keep walking this path, and it just is so beautiful and so artful, and not that Horizon Zero Dawn doesn't have beauty in it, but it does not have that sense of like the thing I'm doing is a necessity, but it fucking sucks. And I'm way into that feeling. I want that feeling more in games, especially the sort of like quiet version of it and not the one that's like shouting at you for being like, you're the bad guy, really. Like, you don't need to. I get it. You don't need to yell. Yeah,
we're
exactly.
Not so different.
We're not so different, you and I, video games. Yeah, exactly. I think that would probably be it, right? And there's some other little things, but by and large, those were the Guacamelee 2. I didn't play that first game,
it's good.
But yeah, no Spelunky 2.
Well, there's different things, Austin Walker.
No, it's no Spelunky 2. That's all I'm saying, eh?
Like, well, if you want to use Spelunky 2 as the barometer for like other game announcements, then 2017 is just not going to pass muster.
It's just not gonna. Sorry.
It has a 2017 problem, just like Horizon Zero Dawn.
Exactly.
There's one other thing that caught my eye, and I'll just say it very briefly. There's a new Codemasters arcade racing game.
Oh, that looked all right.
It's called Onrush, and I'm just...
That's a bad name, but it looked cool.
I know, it's not a great name, but it looks kind of cool, and I really do want another, like, good, big-budget racing game, like arcade-style racing game. Yeah. That's something...
Someone we compared it to, like, San Francisco Rush, almost,
yes,
and speed, and, like...
Yes, that would be amazing. Yeah.
Like, yeah, yeah. And there was Spider-Man. There was some Spider-Man stuff there that... It was like, here's the story. It's Spider-Man. Kingpin's going to jail.
He's having trouble with his rent, you know?
Yeah, so it's like an older...
He's just a guy.
I mean, that's an important thing, right? Like, it confirms rent. That this is older Spider-Man from the Homecoming movie that just came out, right? Like, sure. This Spider-Man has rent instead of chemistry class. so, you know, that's an important
upgraded
distinction.
Upgraded his problems a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, it looks fine. Like, a trailer isn't going to be the thing that's going to sell me on the Spider-Man game. Like, hands-on time is. I need to know how it feels. So, what can you do? All right. We should talk about other stuff. Actually, what we should do real quick is we should take a quick break for a word from probably me talking about a sponsor. If I'm going to guess, then we're going to take a break, and it's going to be me, and I'm going to go like, hey, what's up, Google, or something like that, and that'll be... I hope I didn't just activate your Google Home. If you're...
Oops.
Okay, I'm just going to throw to this break now. We'll be right back.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Welcome back. So what else is going on? Paris, we've put Paris behind us. We probably don't have time to get into indictments today. This is probably not the venue, though. So, boy, what a day.
Yep.
Oh, fuck. Have people been playing
Mario.
Video games?
Mario.
Yeah, tell me about Mario. I've played zero Mario. I'm the one person in games journalism not playing Mario. Oh. Tell me about Mario.
It's really good. I mean, okay. We've already talked about it somewhat at various points, obviously, on the podcast. I had had a couple of hours of experience with it previously from a preview event about a month ago, so I knew it was going to be good. But what I'm really, really enjoying about it is how dense the worlds are. They're not huge, at least thus far. How many worlds in are you?
Yeah,
I've got about five worlds, but I'm also playing it with Patricia. She started it before me, and now we're just kind of hot-seating the whole game, which, by the way, is the best way to play games like this. I think it's still really fun. It really holds up as kind of like a method for getting through 3D platformers. Really, really fun. I'm about five worlds in, but we're actually getting probably like a good 75% of everything in each world and finding all the secrets and going and talking to... the character who gives you, you know, secrets, who kind of gives you hints, and actually going to, you know, Toad and having him mark your map with little hints and little secrets. I just really love how much there is in each world and how the world actually change when you come back to them, and or the desert world even changes just
right.
The scripting, that it changes the world itself. It goes day to night to day again. There's different features of the world. So there's just so much to kind of dig into here, and all of it is holding up really well so far.
Is your
the worlds never get much bigger than what you've experienced.
Okay.
I'm Danielle, but the operating theory of Mario Odyssey is density as opposed to like raw space, and that's how Odyssey plays out in a way that when I was playing through it, like when I was first playing through it, and I was playing it like in the reviewer capacity of like kind of going a little faster and not exploring as much as I normally would, I found it sort of disappointing. But then as I dug into the game more, it was deeply satisfying to just find out how much they had put in there. And although you think you're finding everything, well, when you finish the game, you will find that you have not found nearly everything, and it's a very pleasant surprise.
Awesome.
That's cool. That's good. I'm curious if, Danielle, back when you first went to see the game at a preview event, you came back and were like, it's like an adventure game.
Yes.
Because you are like figuring out puzzles and exploring the world to like piece together like how to each moon, which is like you're collecting these moons. And this is my understanding. Again, I have not played this game, but like each one comes from a challenge, whether it's a platforming challenge or just like, how do I interact with objects in the world to make them do a thing that will give me a moon? So has that held true?
Absolutely, yeah. And obviously Patrick has played more, and I know you said that seems to be more true the further you go, but even very early on, even if you sort of go back to the very first world, I think it's called Cap Town, I'm pretty sure. I kept calling it Hat Town or Hatville or something, but I think it's Cap Town.
It's not a land? It's a town?
Some of them are towns. You know, there's you know, kingdom. I think they're all kingdoms, technically.
Oh.
And it's Cap Town in the something kingdom. I don't know. but yeah, it really does hold true. Like, everything there, and the way you go about finding hints is really cute and very adventure gamey. It's almost like you have a little hint system, you know, and it doesn't feel like cheating ever, because it's just... there's 75 things to do in this world. Like, it's okay to kind of go and get a little hint and at least kind of get in the right area and start trying things. It really does reward experimentation. Like, oh, what if I jump over here? What will happen? Or what if I turn the camera this, you know, 3 degrees to the left? Am I going to see something else? Or what if I just throw my hat on this? You're almost always going to be rewarded with something. There's almost always something that will happen, even if it's just a tiny interaction or a new animation or something like that. And that is really in keeping with sort of the very best adventure game puzzles in terms of, oh yeah, there's always something that's going to help you further along or something that's going to be sort of a joyful way of interacting with the world. So yeah, I think it's really taking the best parts of that tradition and taking it to, you know, Mario depths, like taking it to this kind of giant polished 3D world. And I'm really loving that about it.
The internet is telling me that it's called the Cap Kingdom.
Okay.
But then the most notable city is Bonneton.
Bonneton.
Like bonnets and like
wow.
town.
So
the nickname
good.
Is the nickname of it is the Land of Haberdash Dreams. It's very romantic. It's a very the honeymoon in the Land of Haberdash Dreams. If
I'm
only.
So glad. Let's
Patrick,
go to Bonneton.
Are you sticking with it? Are you continuing to collect moons here and there?
Not quite yet because I like pivoted really quickly to finishing South Park, which I finished up on Saturday. And
how did that wrap up? Did you leave it going like, oh, they turned it around, or did it?
No,
not?
I mean it's more or less how I felt when I wrote my piece a week and a half ago or so is how I feel now. Even outside of like the political constructs and problems I have with South Park and the way they handle their humor, I think it's just a much poorer game and story than I think the Stick of Truth is. Like,
right?
If you're casually interested, like play the first one. I think this one is a I don't know if that's because it's Ubisoft San Francisco or it's because you know that Obsidian was involved or it's just because going back to the well a second time just naturally they just ran out of ideas on the same level. I just I'm glad I finished it because I wanted to kind of see it through, but my mind didn't change, and I still think the original is a better game, even separate from all the other stuff related to South Park. But then, yeah, I wanted to jump into Wolfenstein. But I'm going to Florida with my family on Wednesday for a couple days for a wedding, and that's where I'm very excited to be on the beach and be on the plane and digging into some Mario. Although,
yeah.
I'll probably be sitting next to my kid, and then she'll try and take that Switch away from me, so we'll see how that goes.
That's extremely good,
in my
opinion.
She thinks it's very funny because she's deeply understands like touchscreens, like iPhones and iPads, and she doesn't quite know like how to navigate them, but she knows that they respond to her touch. And so when I'm playing with a Switch, and if I can get her to sit still, it actually works as a kind of a decent distraction tool because she sits there just poking the Switch's screen and it doesn't do anything. And like most games, like there are touchscreen based games on the Switch and it is a touchscreen, but like in Mario, it doesn't do anything. So I'll be sitting there like running around and she's just poking it, thinking like, oh, at some point this is going to do the thing the iPad does. And instead, I managed to trick her for between 3 to 5 minutes, which is usually long enough to get one star in that game.
God. One day she'll be playing with you. Controlling Cappy. Have either of you been or tried the co-op mode at all?
I have not. No.
Not yet. Okay. We need to, but we're having so much fun playing Hot Seat that.
Right. I watched some footage of the co-op where it's like one person is just Cappy, and you can just go anywhere on the screen and like hit stuff, or you can control what Mario gets turned into. It looked fun. It looked like a cute time. Cool. Anybody playing anything else this weekend?
A lot of Rabbids. I'm trying to beat that
game.
Oh,
nice.
I'm trying
yeah,
real hard
I wanna,
to beat
I,
that
that's,
game.
That's one of my ones that I want to finish. I'm like two areas away from the end. I'm a little worried that I've had like 2 months distance from it. And
yeah.
I'm going to just fucking jump into the end game.
Man.
I mean, you can put it on easy mode. That's one of the nice things
that's
the game
true.
Does. Is that if I just realize I'm too rusty to get to the end. The alternative is that you could just look up on YouTube for like the optimal path because like this game is like part of what Rabbids does is there's less randomness than there is in like an XCOM game. I mean, there is randomness, but it's just not the scale of it is much more limited. So if I wanted to, I could like look up the ideal party and look up the ideal initial moves. But I'm hoping to finish that in Golf Story this weekend. And that's a really good game. If you're buying a Switch because Mario's out, like and Zelda, Mario, good games. Like, but don't sleep on Mario and Rabbids. Like, it is a tremendously fun entry-level strategy game.
I need to get back to it. I have been like dipping into a few other things, including a little bit more of XCOM's big expansion, XCOM 2's big expansion, and like it's the same thing, Patrick. Like, oh wait, I stopped playing this game for three right. months. Shit, I'm not. Shut down. Start No Man's Sky. Try to finish the story mode in that. Like, that's much easier to get back into. Like, oh, what do I need? 400 frost crystals? Sure. Easy for me to point my cursor at a frost crystal and get 400 frost crystals. Way harder to manage, like, a war against zombies and alien people on three tactical fronts, you know?
Well, we're at GOTY. We're at, like...
We're here. We're in it.
We're in the GOTY stretch right now. We're in the last 4 miles of a marathon. Uh-huh. Where it's uh-huh. like, oh, you got to make up some time right
What's
now.
Left? So let's actually briefly have that conversation. Like, what is left? It's Call of Duty. It's Star Wars Battlefront.
Yeah.
It's
Call of Duty, the game that's going to somehow have something to say about Nazis right after Wolfenstein.
Oh, my God, that game. I had finished it by the time we talked on Friday, right?
I believe so, yes.
Okay.
I think you were struggling with the final battle or something for a little while.
For a little while, I was. There was a hard fight towards the end. But boy, what a fucking game. Are either of you digging into that more?
Yeah, a bit. I had a little save game snafu.
Oh my God. Oh, I forgot about this.
I'm not gonna put that person on blast because they got me a very nice lunch that day and they were very sorry.
It's neither of us though, to be clear. I do need to, you have to say that. You can't just say
it's nobody who writes. At Waypoint. It's nobody who writes or does social media at Waypoint. But part of our extended team...
And it's not
team,
Natalie either.
It's not Natalie either. Or somebody who does streams. It's somebody, a beloved member of our extended uh-huh. team who does wonderful work for us. Very good work for us. Uh-huh. Wanted to try the game. Maybe wrote over all my save files. So I basically
Wait,
replayed
all of them?
The
I just realized this. You get multiple saves, don't you?
It was none of my saves were in my load menu, no matter what I did. And, like, I tried launching it seven
buddy.
Different ways. Like, it was a load.
Woof. All right, let's go.
Anyway, so I replayed the intro, and I made a different decision about who to save. I'll just say that.
Oh, that's interesting. I'm curious. We'll talk. We still need to do our next Waypoint 101 on the first Wolfenstein and wrap that up. And that should probably turn into a big spoiler cast for the second one, too, at this point.
Maybe that's how we handle it.
I think
that's
how we
salvage
handle
this.
There you go.
I think that's the play.
That's a good idea. Okay.
Yeah, so let's do that for sure. Maybe let's talk to Rob and see where he's at with the new one and figure all that out.
He may want to do a Sonic Forces spoiler cast
because
that's coming out.
It's in November. November 3rd, Call of Duty. November 7th. Neo is coming to Windows PC. I'm excited about that. I need to actually play that game.
Good game.
Sonic Forces is coming. That game looks bad.
It's leaked out already through some like retail channels and the initial. Look, Sonic fans, you got Sonic Mania.
That's right.
Yes,
you're good. You're good. Like this one was never going to be good.
Yep.
You got Sonic Mania. If anything, it made me think about. It's tough. I wanted to write about this because when I was thinking about it this weekend, but I'm not like. A Sonic super fan, so I don't know how
a super. I think you mean
feel.
A super Sonic fan.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. True. Wow,
you've not collected.
I think he almost killed Danielle with that joke.
That was good.
Which is like the fact that like Danielle is the one that throw shade over your joke is like there's a little bit of weirdness right there. But there's something fascinating about Sega's internal inability to sort of understand what makes Sonic work, and that Sonic Mania handed out to an external developer for the first time. Suddenly was able to capture what they've spent the better part of like 20 years trying to recapture. Like that's an indictment of like Sega's internal culture. Exactly. It's
we got there either way.
That's
finally.
Probably not a game that I would beat, but I am curious to like check it out because I
wait,
do
Mania or Forces?
Mania is so good.
Forces.
Okay.
Because I want to write that story. Maybe that means I have to like at least check out both of those. To sort of explore like what that actually means in a meaningful way.
Mania is definitely worth your damn time, especially while GOTY is.
Maybe I should buy that on Switch. And maybe I'll find time in Florida.
There you go.
To play.
You go.
What else? What else is coming out? Need for Speed. Need for Speed Payback. Later this month.
That feels like a game that no one realizes is coming out.
Yeah.
Need for Speed Payback. Need for Speed Payback. Heist mode.
Vroom!
Heist mode. Daddy's got to go to work, and then The Rock breaks the cast off his arm.
Is this an ad for
Broom?
Need for Speed
we're going to take a quick break. We have to go to our Need for Speed Payback ad break. Coming out this fall, have you seen Fast and the Furious? Because I think that the dev team has. They've said it's kind of not like Fast and the Furious, but they also say that it has, quote, intense heist missions, high-stakes car battles, epic cop pursuits, and jaw-dropping set pieces. That's the sound of my jaw dropping. Boom. I don't know, that game looks all right.
Locoroco 2 remastered on PS4.
Wait, is it actually coming out this year? Is that
apparently
that's
in December.
Okay,
December.
Cool.
Before then, though, we've got L.A. Noire, which I think is going to inspire a bunch of people to wish that game was getting a sequel, because I was one of those people.
Same.
That,
maybe this will do
game,
well.
They had a lot of problems in like the second, like the final act of game, but so many things that
I
it
like
tried.
The final act.
I don't remember enough to, like, that's just, like, my like,
there's a
feeling
big,
of how I felt about it, but I couldn't, like, articulate why I felt that.
It went from Chinatown to straight L.A. Confidential, I think, is what it did, and it kind of, I feel like it fell apart a little bit at the end. I remember liking
See, I think it goes literally the other way, because you go, I'm not going to spoil what that last act is, but, like, a major character comes up, and you get a different perspective on the events of that game and the main character you've been playing as, because you get the perspective of somebody else who is like the actual secret hero of that game.
Oh, right. Okay. Right. Okay. Yeah.
I love that stuff. Cause like you go from investigating like murders to investigating arson cases as like from a private instead of a public perspective. I'm not saying it sticks the landing necessarily. I actually think that the second act is the bit where it like starts to struggle. Anyway, we should all play that game because I think that game is pretty good.
I like that game a lot. Actually, it's probably my favorite Rockstar game.
Apparently, the Switch port is going to be $10 more than the other ports.
Oh.
$50.
I mean, that's been a thing with the Switch. There have been various games that
I didn't realize
the physical nature, like the cartridge nature
sure.
of those games.
Sure.
Some developers have announced they were going to charge more and then been shamed into like eating like whatever like the cost differential is. Something tells me Rockstar is not going to back down.
Yeah. New Pokemon Ultra Sun Ultra Moon. I will probably not dip into this, even though I'll tell myself I will. But I just don't have the time.
At this point, like I've wanted to play like a modern Pokemon for a while, and I think like the Switch game that comes out either next year or the year after will probably be like when I finally. Like,
right.
dip back into that again.
Yeah. Battlefront. Star Wars Battlefront 2, which has that single-player mode. Have you seen those trailers? Because I've noticed something twice in the last two trailers of that game.
Big heads?
Which is...
Giant
Yeah!
Heads.
Yes! Yes!
It's
what is
weird.
Happening?
It's weird. I don't know. It just looks like Darth Helmet is running around.
It
like,
literally does.
What the hell? Like,
I don't know if someone hit the switch on big head mode or what, but there's a there's a specific shot of the main character. Her name is like, fuck, it's like Eden or something, but spelled with an I instead of an E.
Sure.
Putting on a helmet, like her stormtrooper helmet. She's like an all black everything stormtrooper. And like, it's like Inferno Squad, and puts it on, and it's huge. It's so big. I don't understand.
Yeah, it's like six times the size of her head. It's really, it's an issue.
Anyway, that game is going to be curious, I think, especially because of the loot box stuff, the loot box discourse right now, that they kind of came out and kind of quashed some fears that the game would be too loot box heavy, or they tried to. We'll see in release.
She's hiding them in the helmet. That's what it is.
That's
hiding
why she
the
has
loot
such
boxes
a big helmet.
In the helmet.
Oh, God. Actually, to get a better fitted helmet, you have to buy a loot box. That's the actual.
Oh, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then the last thing for this year that really sticks out to me is like the
Bubsy, the
fuck,
upcoming
fuck
Bubsy, the Woolies Strike Back.
Did you see that tweet from Bubsy the other day?
Yo, that game comes out tomorrow. I know what I'm streaming in the morning.
Oh my fucking God!
Those
are
Woolies
you
are striking back. That's
brand
true.
Brand Mew launch trailer.
Fuck you.
Showcases.
Keep reading. Fuck
nope.
you, but keep reading.
Nope, I refuse.
Xenoblade Chronicles 2, that's coming.
Is it?
They haven't. Yes. Reggie told me yes. Reggie?
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
100%. That's what he said. Who knows? Maybe he was lying through his teeth. But I just saw Reggie last week. I still have to transcribe that interview. There's some interesting things in it. But one of the things he said was like, we still have a great slate of games coming. Mario Odyssey, because it was right before Mario Odyssey came out. Mm-hmm. Xenoblade Chronicles 2. With Xenoblade Chronicles 2, we really... And then he said some stuff about that game, and I don't remember what it was, but that's what
he
said.
Impressive. That when that game was announced as part of like
100%.
The Switch lineup for 2017, I was like, bullshit,
100%.
That game was coming.
I mean, I
said
it about
Mario
Odyssey.
Too.
Yeah. I think we're all... Yep. Everyone is surprised that they nailed two huge games already. I don't think that Xenoblade Chronicles 2 is going to be as massive a success as Breath of the Wild and Mario Odyssey will have been. But hey, if they can launch those two games, or those three games, you know, Fire Emblem Warriors is a first party game too. ARMS, mm-hmm. Splatoon 2, like, what a year for the Switch. I think we're going to be saying what a year for the Switch, like, at the end of this year when we finish doing our end of the year stuff. All right, so that's what's coming up next after this, I guess. That's in our lives. I'm glad we can breathe a little bit more. I need to go work on my Wolfenstein write-up. I don't know what the fuck I'm going to write yet. I had a whole thing, and then I read Emmanuel over at our friends at Motherboard. Emmanuel Malberg wrote up...
I think?
Yeah, Myberg. Yeah. Myberg. Yeah, I said Malberg. Meant Myberg. Emmanuel Myberg wrote up the piece that I was writing, and I was like, fuck, he already did it.
He stole it.
He had the ideas and then wrote them before I did. What a fool I am. So I'm going to figure out something else to write and write that today. What else is happening this week? Patrick's going to stream some Bubsy.
I just got an email from Bubsy Bobcat.
I know.
I just got that one like a minute
Wait,
ago.
I thought you were going to say...
Please be careful, Danielle. That is embargoed until Tuesday, October 31st at 7 a.m. PT. Don't spoil those Bubsy deets.
I didn't get an email
Buzzbee,
from Bubsy.
Bubsy.
You might
Bubsy,
get it in like Buzzbee. Two more minutes. It's like staggered. It's clearly staggered. Bubsy is emailing each one of us by himself, you know, like singly each one of us, and he's staggering it out so we're not overwhelmed.
I'm gonna break embargo and tell you that this press release is to announce that it's actually Bubsbee, not
Bubsbee. That adds up. Let me check spam and see if Bubsy shows up in my spam. That seems...
That says it's Laura Croft, not Lara Croft.
What? Oh, it says that?
It's weird. Wow. I don't know why they're weighing in on that as well, but that's
good. I got no Bubsy in the spam. I got no Bubsy in my main email. God damn.
I don't know what's going on.
I'll make sure. The email is from the Bubsy Bobcat. I'm angry.
Yep. Bubsy Bobcat. It's real good.
I'm angry.
My email, my spam is just like... The first blockchain platform that pays for you playing games. No, glad.
Oh,
good
boy.
Job, spam. Good job catching things about blockchain platforms.
I got a great press release for Mermaid and some other type of teacups.
Oh, I got that. I got that one
that
Mermaid emailed me. Cutest tea sets for one and two ever and then a website that I'm not going to name.
Right.
And then it's cute, like teacups, but like they look like mermaids and maids and astronaut ladies.
Yeah, I like the astronaut lady one. It's pretty cool, actually.
I like them all. Listen, I have room in my life for mermaids. I'm going to put it out there.
The mermaid one, the astronaut one is really cute because the cup is like the helmet. Like,
oh, that's
it's really,
really
cute, actually.
Oh, it's like the helmet, like the glass helmet. Yeah. You take it off and pour. That's definitely not tea. That's definitely whiskey. It's a glass helmet.
bet it is.
That's like a hot toddy at least. all right. I think that's going to do it for us today. I know, Patrick, you have to go take care of a child.
Still sleeping. I don't know.
Nice.
Jessica, wake up.
Don't wake up your baby. Let your baby sleep. Your baby needs sleep. God, you've been doing this for over a year now. I guess
tell me.
Which is, like, as of right now, obviously we did our 100th episode of the podcast recently. I mentioned it on Twitter a week ago today or something like that was when we announced the name Waypoint. But it is October 30th, which would mean that literally a year ago today, we were probably playing a bad video game on stream.
Yep.
Or maybe right this moment was like a Mario Kart tournament or something. Because
The GoldenEye tournament was on the 30th, I believe.
That sounds right. I feel like that adds up right to me. So thank you to everybody who has been supporting us over the last year. It has been a remarkable time. We've done things that we're really proud of, and we couldn't do any of it without the support of all of you and the support of so many people who you don't see. I said this at the end of the 72-hour stream that we did last year. I say this as often as I can, but you know, for each one of us who is out here writing about Bubsy and doing all the other hard work of games journalism, there are other people who are, you know, running, making sure we have benefits and making sure that, you know, if we're going to have a guest on the stream, that we, you know, get all the paperwork right. You know, for every Austin or Danielle or Patrick, there is, you know, a Eunice or a Linda or a CL or so many people who contribute to what we do. So thanks to all of them. And thank you to everybody who's listened, all of you out there who are listening and supporting and spreading the word. You know, we don't advertise this podcast. We don't get out there and say, you know, we don't pay any money so that there are ads for this podcast on any other big podcast network or anything like that. As far as I know, as far as Joel, you didn't, as of today, you're not advertising it. So what I'm saying is, if you could get out there, let people know that you've loved Waypoint Radio, that you like to read the stuff that we do on the site, that you love watching our streams, like, that would mean the world to us. It would help us a lot. So do that. And then just thanks, you know, to everybody on my team. Like, it has been a dream to launch a site like this and to have the ability to dig into stories that we think are important. I think we've hit a lot. We've had some misses, but like, I think that we have grown a lot as a team and as a site, as a publication over the last year. I'm so excited for everything that we're doing next. We have a lot of pots on the stove, a lot of irons in the fire, a lot of plates spinning, a lot of balls in the air. What are the, is that all of them? Is that all of the ways?
We got a lot of busbying.
Yep.
I hate
the
everyone.
Woolies are buzzing.
I'm closing the site. I want to announce today, this is it. Thanks so much for supporting us. But we're done now. No more.
Hey, Bubsy is out. We did it. We made it.
I guess we're not allowed to end the site until we stream through all of NAC 2, actually. I think that's the rule.
Yeah, that's
all fair. Of NAC 2 and probably all of Superman 64.
Stop.
NAC to soups.
No.
Yeah.
Yep.
No, I would play Superman 64 again if I could play it on an emulator with save states.
I'll talk to Legal. I'll shout out to Legal. Yeah. I'll talk to Legal and see what we can do.
I'm unwilling to play Super Mario 64 in its natural state.
Rick and Legal, we have that game. Just let us play it on an emulator so that
we can
get
show
save
proof
states.
That we bought it. We have
Here
the receipt from 1998.
I went to Video Games New York and bought that game. All right, that's going to be it for us today. I'm Austin Walker. You can find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. Where can people find you, Patrick?
I'm at Patrick Klubik.
How about you, Danielle?
At Danielle R.I.
You can find everything we do at twitter.com/waypoint, facebook.com/waypointvice. You can find us over at waypoint.vice.com on YouTube, where archives are going up of all of the stuff that has not been archived for
Yay!
The last few months. It's happening
Yay,
every single day. Shout out to Natalie. You can find that at youtube.com/waypointvice. Thank you to Bowen for letting us use the track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. You can find out more info about that at waypoint.zone/BOEN. As always, you can join us on the forums at discourse.zone or at forum.waypoint.vice.com. But discourse.zone is definitely the URL. And thanks, as always, to our incredible mod team there, who has helped build a really fantastic community. You know, over the last couple of weeks, it has been, as we talked about last time, with NeoGAF kind of shutting down or turning into a hell space, as it has completely done at this point. A lot of people came there, and shout out to the mods who've been doing incredible work, both on the forums and in our Discord. Right, I think that's it. Am I forgetting anything? I think that's it. I think that's our whole outro. Thanks to Rob Schulte and Sophie, who one of which will be producing the show today. And thank you for listening. Until next time, what do we say to him, Danielle?
Be good and be good at it.
Peace.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.